great for business. They're bursting at the seams. I'm Todd Starnes, Fox News Radio.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Josh and I certainly get a chance to laugh sometimes at some of those stories that end up on Fox News there just before coming into the broadcast. That last one was about bikini-clad baristas. Certainly not the way that we're looking to open up the broadcast on Christian Talk 660, but you can't control that coming from the national media. We're here today on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast to talk about a much more important topic than that. We're here to talk about the subject of relativism today. Relativism is an extremely important topic, something that we have to be able to understand and articulate, at least at some level, because it is the prevailing attitude, the prevailing philosophy that many people live by in our country today. It is really just that important. Well, some time ago, I did an interview with Greg Kokel, who is the co-author of a book called Relativism, and I love this this subtitle of the book, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. That's an excellent, excellent title and subtitle. And we did an interview with Greg about this subject, and we really zeroed in at that time on the section that talked about relativism's seven fatal flaws. It was one of the chapters that Greg wrote in this book. Begins on page 61 if you happen to have a copy of the book. And our entire discussion was really revolved around those seven items that are pictured there. Greg is with us again today, and we want to talk about some of the other items in this book now, because I think it's so important. By the way, that discussion that I had with Greg probably a year and a half ago about those seven fatal flaws turned out to be one of the most popular broadcasts that we've ever done on the radio program. Many, many people are still downloading that interview that we did. You can still hear it and download it absolutely free out at our website at www.knowingthetruth.org. So that's still available to you. But I want to delve down deeper in other aspects of this topic today, again, revolving around Greg's book, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair, but something different than what we did last time. With that, let me go ahead and welcome Greg again onto the Knowing the Truth radio program. And I should mention that Greg is the founder and president of Stand to Reason, which is an organization that trains Christians to think more clearly about their faith and to make an even-handed, incisive, yet gracious defense for classic Christianity and classical Christian values in the public square. That's a noble and an excellent mission statement that you find out on their website. With that, Greg, welcome back on to the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
Hey, Kevin, it's a lot of fun to be back with you. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Greg, I'm a little bit concerned that if we get into the discussion like I hope we're going to today about relativism, mm-hmm. that I won't have a chance at the end of the broadcast to make a hard turn and say, oh, let's stop discussing this now, and Greg, tell us about what's going on at Stand to Reason. So I want to give you the opportunity to do that right here at the top of the broadcast. What's going on there? What's new from Stand to Reason? I want to make sure you get the chance to tell the folks.
Yeah, thanks for giving me that opportunity, Kevin. There's a couple of things that are happening right now that we're really excited about. Some are still in the hopper, and some have already broken out. The biggest thing is that we've actually dedicated an entire site to our outreach to young people, our training to young people. I got asked a question recently, Kevin, about whether I speak to young people, like high school and junior high and the like, and I had to be honest. I said I try to avoid it because I'd rather speak to you know, college kids or adults and stuff like that. It's my personal preference. That's who I think I communicate best with. But we have someone on staff that is an expert at talking to youth. His name is Brett Kunkel, and he is really the force behind our website that can be is located at strplace.org. So we call it STR Place, location strplace.org, because this is the place where the younger community can come and interact and learn from Brett. He takes our material and he translates it in language that is especially appealing to the young people and accessible to them. He does a lot of video work, so a lot of the questions and issues that he deals with are there in video presentations. It's not text-heavy, though we do have some of that as well. Now, the site is brand new. It's just been up for about 3 weeks, and so we're still populating it with information. But we have a regular stream of visitors there, and any young people in our audience here can go there at strplace.org, and there'll be a lot of information there for them. I think there's also a link from our regular homepage, str.org. So that's one thing, and we're very excited about that, and strategically this is really important. I'll tell you something else that's been happening in the last, say, couple of months and that we're looking forward to a launch later this year, and that is we've been getting requests for years about having our material translated into Spanish, and we just haven't been able to do that. And now we are on the verge of opening up a small site, a portal from our own site, where some of our most important audio files and written files will be available in Spanish, which means not only help for the massive Spanish-speaking population here in this country, but also Central and South America, all of Latin America, then will be able to access that. So those are two things that are on the horizon that we're really, really thrilled about.
Well, fantastic. I'm out on that website right now, the str.org website, and I just want to tell our listeners that there's a tremendous amount of information available to you out here. You can find out how to register for some of these events. Greg has his own national broadcast that you can listen to as well. I was just looking under their blog section here, and they've got that Dr. Sproul and Dr. Stephen Meyer were just in a discussion about ID, about intelligent design. I have both of those gentlemen on the radio broadcast as well. That's a great discussion between the two of them, and so just a lot of good material out here, and I want to make sure that people are aware of that. Craig, this is not obviously not your latest book. You've got Tactics was another one that you came out with. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm glad we're talking about relativism because it's as fresh now as it was 11 years ago when Dr. Beckwith and I wrote that book, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. But just last year, about a year ago, I released another book through Zondervan by myself. I wrote it myself, and it's called Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. And this has been wildly popular, much more popular than relativism, because it is meant to give the rank-and-file Christian, even if you don't know hardly anything about theology or apologetics, a game plan, a step-by-step plan that allows you to maneuver in a conversation no matter how little you know or how aggressive or intelligent the other person happens to be. And it really makes our engagements with others who disagree with us look a lot more like diplomacy than D-Day, which is what I'm after.
Well, I certainly do not mind at all, and I hope that you're able to do that, but if you want to weave in some of the sessions and the teaching that you put down there in Tactics into our discussion, that would be great. I didn't bring it. I have a copy, but I didn't bring it to the studio with me today.
No, that's all right. In fact, the book Tactics is really a reflection of an approach that we've had for years and years and years at Stand to Reason, and that is to be wise in the way we manage our conversations with people. So even in the relativism book, you might notice there is a chapter on tactics in dealing with the problem of relativism. So it'll be easy to do that.
Great. We're going to go ahead and take our first commercial break, which will give me an opportunity to give the listeners the ways that they can participate in the program today. But when we come back, I'm hoping that we can start with just some of the basics. I'm always concerned that there may be a group of people that I'm talking over their head and through throwing around some theological jargon. So I want to break it down. I want to make sure, I think it's so important that we understand relativism. Start in the beginning of your book and work through, get you to give us a summary of some of these chapters.
Sure.
When we come back from the break, I'll go ahead and give you the number, the call to participate in the program. Be right back.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
There's only one truth. It's not what I think it is. It's not what you think it is. It's not what Stu thinks it is. It's what God says it is in the Bible.
Truth for the now generation. Guests who push your hot button.
Sunday morning is the most segregated time in America. And we just need to start losing the labels of white church, black church. I mean, it is the church.
Hey, Upstate, Stu Everson from Truth Talk Live inviting you to join me weekdays at 5 right here on Christian Talk 660.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie B's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie B's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie B's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
In a world of almost constant medical and scientific advances, everyone will likely face a difficult ethical decision at some point. Crossway has published a new book by Dr. David Van Drunen called Bioethics and the Christian Life, a guide to making difficult decisions. It's a book that puts bioethical dilemmas in the context of a broader, godly perspective. It addresses specific controversial issues like contraception, assisted reproduction, and euthanasia, and Christians will find it to be helpful and theologically sound.
Snickerdoodle shortbread, fudgy nut bars. How many treats? Snickerdoodle shortbread, fudgy nut bars. How many treats in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back to the second segment of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. I'm going to go ahead and give you some information about how you can participate in the program here today. The easiest way is to use the toll-free number. That number is good across the country. It's 1-888-660-WLFJ. That's 1-888-660-9535. Be happy to take your call with your question or comment about our subject today. Also, you can simply send me an email. That email address is Kevin, K-E-V-I-N, at knowingthetruth.org. And I will have Twitter up here and running in just a second. And the account on Twitter is Knowing the Truth. And so any of those ways, be happy to take your question or your comment. Also want to let you know about a couple of upcoming events, primarily the programs that we have scheduled for next week, as well as a special event next Thursday. Listen, if you're listening in the listening audience today and you're in the upstate of South Carolina area, we have a special pastor's luncheon that we've put together. We're going to go ahead and give you a free lunch over at Stevie B's Pizza, 70 different types of pizza that they have there, so you can order whatever type you'd like. We're going to give you a free lunch to come there. I'm also giving you two free tickets to the upcoming PCRT conference. That's the Philadelphia Conference on Reformed Theology. It's coming here to Greenville. Another talk show host, Michael Horton from the White Horse Inn, will be at that event. Joel Beakey, an excellent theologian, will be here speaking at the event. Rick Phillips from Second Press will be there. Lig Duncan will be part of the meeting as well. And Cornell Venema, and they'll all be here in town in April speaking. Those tickets are $125 a piece for the conference. I'm giving each one of the pastors that come to this event next Thursday, the pizza luncheon, I'm giving you two free tickets for you and your wife. wife or you and somebody from the church to be able to come and attend this conference right here in Greenville. Additionally, I'm going to give you a copy of Gabe Florer's book on the atonement. And so PNR Publishing and the folks from the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals have made that available to us, and they're going to provide you with a free copy of that book when you come to the event. Free lunch, free conference tickets, and a free book. It's a no-brainer. Make sure your pastor knows about this. Go out to my website at knowingthetruth.org, and there's a link there that you can click on for all the information, or just send me an email, kevin@knowingthetruth.org, and I'll take that as your reservation. Also, just very quickly, next week, three guests lined up. Josh Harris will be with me. We'll be talking about his book called Dug Down Deep. He'll be with me on Tuesday. Scott Rasmussen, you probably know Rasmussen Polling. You see it a lot on Fox News. Scott Rasmussen will be with me on Wednesday. We'll be talking about In Search of Self-Governance. And then on Thursday, I had mentioned earlier that Dr. Stephen Meyer was in a conversation with R.C. Sproul, and that's available out in the internet and out there at Greg Kogel's website, str.org. But somebody else from that same organization, the Discovery Institute, will be with me on Thursday's broadcast next week. His name is Wesley Smith, and we're going to be talking about A Rat is a Pig, is a Dog is a Boy. I know it's a strange title, but he's talking about this whole environmental animal right group and the way that they equate a moral equivalence between the life of an animal and the life of a human being. It's going to be a very interesting discussion. Let's go back to our discussion with Greg Kogel now, the founder and president of Stand to Reason. Greg, just before the break, I was saying that I just wanted to work through some of the basic foundational items that you lay out here.
Mm-hmm.
The first part talks about understanding relativism. It has three chapters: the death of truth, what is moral relativism, and then three different kinds of relativism. If you could, can you just give us a summary of that part one, what you lay out there as the groundwork for relativism?
Yeah, the first is just a tendency that we see in culture in general over the last 20 years, and that is the notion that there are truths that could be known about the world, especially in the area of religion and ethics, is just dying. The slogan for this now postmodern age is could simply be summed up like this: there is no truth. Mm. Now, there are all kinds of problems with that claim, and it turns out to be obviously false for a number of reasons, but this is what we're faced with. And actually, it's a very, very clever strategy if you think in terms of spiritual warfare, because if you are, in the past we used to argue that Christianity is the truth over and against some other claim, and people would say, no, Christianity isn't true, it's false, some other thing is true, maybe atheism or some other religion or whatever. So that was one type of discussion. But now the discussion is we've been undercut in that in a very clever way. Now the claim is, well, there is no truth at all. So it doesn't make any sense to claim that one religion is true and the other is false. None can be true in the objective, or some Christians might say the absolute sense. These are all just made-up things by human beings. This is what our own culture believes, and some other culture has a different cultural story, and that's as far as you can take it. And you can see then, even arguing for the truth of your view now becomes irrelevant, because people are not confident that there are truths that could even be known in these areas. And that's what I call the death of truth. Okay, so that's the first thing. Then what we do in the book is we look a little bit more carefully about how this notion is applied to morality. Obviously, if there is no truth, then there can't be moral truth. So what is moral? What do moral claims or moral rules amount to? When somebody says this is wrong, or this is good, or that's bad, what are they talking about? And here I think it's good to think of it, the contrast between two statements, Kevin. Here's the first one: insulin controls diabetes. And here's the second one. Mm. Haagen-Dazs butter pecan ice cream is delicious. Now, I think everybody's going to say yes to the truthfulness of the first one, insulin controls diabetes, but they may balk on the second one. However, there are many listeners, including yours truly, who will say, yes, that's also true, that Häagen-Dazs butter pecan ice cream is delicious. Mm-hmm. But when you think of those two statements, it's true that insulin controls diabetes, and it's true that Häagen-Dazs butter pecan ice cream is delicious. We realize immediately that these are two entirely different kinds of statements, because in the first case, we're talking about the insulin. That the insulin can do this. In other words, we're talking about the object itself. Mm-hmm. But in the second case, we're not really talking about ice cream. We're talking about me. When I say that it's delicious, we're talking about what I prefer and what I enjoy. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, there is no truth or falsehood about the how butter pecan ice cream tastes. It depends on the individual. Well, if you get the distinction between those two sentences, you really get the distinction between objective and subject of a relativistic morality. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, when it comes to morality, people think of moral statements like abortion is wrong, or homosexuality is wrong, or premarital sex is wrong, or rape is wrong even, as more like the second statement, the statement about ice cream, than it is like the first statement, the statement about insulin. Mm-hmm. And so it turns out morality becomes an ice cream kind of thing. Everybody has their own ideas of what they prefer. And one person might prefer one set of moral rules, another one might prefer another set of moral rules. And who are we to say? Because it turns out that morality is just an individual matter. Or it's up to the person to decide. Different strokes for different folks. And that's really what's at the heart of moral relativism. Now, as we talked about last time, there are serious problems with this approach, and nobody lives it out consistently because nobody's really a moral relativist deep in their heart. They know better because God has made the world differently. But at least when people hear statements like, who are you to push your morality on me, or it's wrong to say other people are wrong, you see the obvious contradiction there. Where that's coming from is this current impulse to moral relativism. So that's the second item. The third item, then, is as we see that there isn't this impulse in culture in relativism, there are actually three different ways that this relativistic impulse kind of works its way out in a little bit more academic circles and also on the popular level. So if you're going to take a class on ethics in college, one of the first things that you're going to be faced with is you're going to be given grotesque examples of behavior in other cultures that would be grotesque from our perspective that are completely accepted in those other cultures. And in other words, this is an observation now, and it's usually going to be in an anthropology class, that different cultures have different morality. So in India, they practice sati. That means when the husband died, the mother, the wife of the husband, would also be killed, burned alive on the funeral pyre of her husband when he was immolated. So, and we look at that with our Western sensibilities, and we think, well, that's awful, but they think it's just fine. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, what the anthropologists are trying to do here is they're trying to point to differences of opinion about morality in different cultures and use that as evidence that morality just turns out to be an ice cream kind of thing after all. Hmm. We have our flavor, they have theirs, and there's no way to judge one against the other. There's actually a famous line conversation between an Indian and a British officer during the time of the British colonization of India. And when the British went to act against this, what they considered a barbaric behavior, the Indians said, well, we have a custom. And this is the custom that we have, that when the husband dies, the woman is killed. And the Brit said, and we have a custom too. And the custom is that we have is we hang murderers, So you can see how this becomes a bit self-defeating and just a power grab if that's all that morality is left up to. And that's the first kind. The second kind, and I can talk about the weakness of that in a minute if you'd like to, but sure. The second way that we are going to encounter, I call that society does relativism, by the way. It's just an observation that societies do different things. And from that, people conclude that morality must be relative. Here's the second approach. They take the view that, I call it society Let's see, what do I call it? Society does and society says relativism. In other words, we have an obligation to do whatever our society tells us to do. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we should obey the laws of America. But, you know, when people are in another culture, they should obey their own laws. And if those laws are different from our laws, we can't judge other people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're to be tolerant one culture to another. So this is another expression of that relativistic impulse. The third one, and it's the most extreme, it's the one we talked about really last time, is what might be called, I say, relativism, or individual relativism. And on this view, it doesn't matter what culture says. You don't have any obligation to obey anybody because, after all, there are no objective moral rules for anything. Mm. It's all ice cream. And so if I differ from my culture, who are they to tell me how I should behave? So these, once again, these three different ways that relativism is kind of characterized, and you'll run into this when you go to college especially, is the cultural differences or culture, I'm getting my terms mixed up. Society does relativism, that they just, everybody has different points of view, every culture does, and therefore morals are relative. Then you have society says relativism, in other words, you have to do whatever your society says, but one's culture can differ from one another. And the third one is individual, I say relativism, which means I don't have to obey anybody ultimately. Mm-hmm. If there is no moral obligation, then it's up to me entirely. And in America, you'll hear all three of those,
yes.
But the individual operates a little bit between the second and the third.
Mm-hmm.
That is, he thinks you should obey society, but he also wants to do what he wants to do, and that comes out too.
It's like a collective subjectivism, right? The cultural part of
yes.
it. It's still subjective. There is no objective truth that is brought into the equation. It's just a collective, majority rule type of subjectivism.
That's exactly right.
Majority of people feel that this is an acceptable behavior, then it must be acceptable.
That's right.
I wanted to ask you about something you include here in the book that I think is very, very popular today. And it's the, you included a little letter that was written by Faye Waddleton, who was the former president of Planned Parenthood. And she wrote about the idea that she didn't state it specifically as this, but this is really what she is promoting. Is a moral neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
And we find this so often today that people speak about, you know, there being something called a moral neutrality, that they are neutral on the situation, and therefore you as a Christian introducing any objective truth or any of these types of, this type of your moralism into the situation is wrong because it's not neutral. Like my let me read at least a portion, if not all of her letters, so that people in our listening audience can hear this. This is from the former president of Planned Parenthood. She says this: like most parents, I think that a sense of moral responsibility is one of the greatest gifts I can give my child. But teaching morality doesn't mean imposing my moral values on others. It means sharing wisdom and giving reasons for believing as I do, and then trusting others to think and judge for themselves. My parents' morals were deeply rooted in religious conviction, but tempered by tolerance, the essence of which is respect for other people's views. They taught me that reasonable people may differ on moral issues, and that fundamental respect of others is morality of the highest order. I have devoted my career to ensuring a world in which my daughter, Felicia, can inherit that legacy. I hope the tolerance and respect that I show her as a parent is reinforced by the work she sees me doing every day, fighting for the rights of all individuals to make their own moral choice decisions about childbearing. 75 years ago, Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, founded Planned Parenthood to liberate individuals from the, quote, mighty engines of repression, unquote. As she wrote, quote, the men and women of America are demanding that they be allowed to mold their lives, and not at the arbitrary command of the church or state, but at their own conscience and judgment as that may dictate, unquote. I'm proud to continue that struggle to defend the rights of all people to their own beliefs, when others try to inflict their views on me, my daughter, or anyone else, that's not morality. It's tyranny, it's unfair, and it's un-American, unquote. I want to just break this apart a little bit and talk about, I think many people, Christians, would probably read that, and they would say, well, that sounds right, you know, that sounds fair. You know, she doesn't want to impose anything, but isn't she really imposing something here?
Yeah, this is under a section that I call the myth of moral neutrality, and it's actually a brilliant piece. It's written so well, which is why I include it. I don't want to ridicule her. I want to give a very finely worded expression of the point of view that I think is mistaken. I have a suspicion that having read that now, Kevin, there are readers, you having read that, there are listeners, rather, that are already detecting a problem here. It sounds so sensible and so reasonable and so tolerant, and in fact, it seems, you know, she says, trust others to think and judge for themselves, mold your conscience and your lives as their conscience and judgment may dictate. But in fact, something much more insidious in a certain sense is going on here. This whole piece is not morally neutral. In fact, it is morally loaded at many different points. Even the way she ends, she says, when others try to inflict their views on me, that is, when people try to, in this particular case, try to argue that it's wrong to take the life of an innocent human being just because that innocent human being, the unborn child, is in the way and can't defend itself. When they do that, well, then she says, that's not morality. But then what does she call it? She calls it tyranny, that it's unfair and it's un-American. Now, notice that those are moral judgments that she's passing. Mm-hmm. And regardless of whether people think she's right or wrong in this, the point I'm making is she's arguing for moral neutrality, but her piece is thick with moral judgments.
Yes.
She is not neutral herself. She thinks it's wrong to stop a woman from having an abortion in any way, even trying to persuade her. That's wrong. Well, if you say something is wrong, you're not morally neutral, are you? Mm-hmm. You're taking a side. And what's worse, when you think about it, is Faye Waddleton will force her morality on other people. How do I know that? Because essentially, she said so in her own piece. She said, and I'm quoting here from what you just read, I have devoted my career to ensuring a world in which my daughter, Felicia, can inherit that legacy. Well, what is it that Faye Waddleton does or did? She was a lobbyist, you know?
Yeah.
She tried to prevail upon lawmakers to pass laws that reflected her point of view. She might as well have written, I have devoted my career to ensuring a world in which my point of view is enforced. Now, again, I don't want people to be confused here. I am not objecting that Faye Waddleton wants to have the law reflect her point of view. I mean, that's the way our system works. What I'm pointing out is that it is not neutral. Mm-hmm. And she is trying to make a sympathetic case for her pro-abortion position by arguing moral neutrality when, in fact, she is not the least bit neutral about this. And let me add one more comment here, Kevin, if we have a moment.
Sure, right.
For in light of your earlier comment about it, can we be neutral, people say we should be neutral. And here, let's just be neutral about abortion, let people decide for themselves. What if I said, you know what, some people believe in human slavery or human trafficking, which is a popular concern right now.
Sure.
Human trafficking, slave trade, modern slave trade, essentially. Some people agree with it, some people don't. So let's just be neutral about it and allow people to make their own decisions. Hmm. Would anybody really believe that such a position was actually neutral? No, it's not neutral, because in our willingness to allow people to make their own decisions about human trafficking, we are saying that human trafficking is an ice cream kind of thing. It's not wrong in itself. Now, that's a very straightforward moral position that someone's taking. And so, therefore, people can decide, you know, whatever they want to do. But if it turns out that human trafficking is a terrible wrong, then so-called being neutral about it is essentially approving it.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Beckwith, is my co-author in the Relativism book, has talked a lot about this and written about it, that really on these kinds of things, there is no neutrality.
Right. Right. And we see that this is just pervasive in our society. We had now President, then Senator Barack Obama on the program, and his party line about when I approached him about the subject of abortion was that one abortion is one too many. Well, you know, these little bumper sticker political slogans are designed to portray some sort of neutrality in mm-hmm. the situation. But he later on said that he doesn't know when conception actually takes place.
Or when life begins. Yeah, it was above his pay grade.
Above his pay grade. Well, if you don't know when it begins, why would you be interested in limiting abortion?
Of course.
Because, you know, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
If you don't see the child as a baby, then why are you interested in limiting the removal? To you, it's just like a tissue, so why would you be interested?
Exactly. That is such a profound insight, Kevin. I put it this way. If the unborn is not a human being, then no justification for abortion is necessary. You don't have to have a choice or privacy. I mean, just nobody right. needs a justification to get their tooth pulled.
Sure.
You know, they just do it.
Yeah.
So if it is, as he claims or seems to suggest, that it's just a piece of tissue, then why limit it, as you're saying? But if it turns out that the unborn is a valuable human being, then no justification for abortion is adequate.
Exactly.
Because we don't kill innocent human beings for the reasons that people say they have abortions, like for privacy or personal convenience, or because they can't afford them, or because it's, you know, it's a matter right. of personal choice or something like that. So you can't. That's a you know, a gap that politicians try to straddle all the time, and this one in particular is a master at that.
Sure.
And people ought not be taken by it, whether it's him or anybody else, even a Republican for that matter.
Oh yeah, definitely. We're equal opportunity exposers here on this program.
Right.
So let me go to the phone lines very quickly. Ron, right here from Greenville, has been patiently waiting. Ron, you got a question or a comment today for our guest?
Yeah, I've got a question. A lot of times I get in these conversations, regardless of what it is, I'll ask a question in return, and then that is, well, you know, how do we know what we know? And how do you know what you know is true at the time that you say it? And I try to encourage thought in a person's trying to understand how they know what they know, because, of course, the work of the law is written on the hearts of everyone.
Right.
And God uses conscience to accuse. So could you talk about how that might work into conversations where we encounter people? Is it a good thing? Can we do it in a way that's, similar to what you're talking about?
Good point.
Yeah,
good question, Ron.
Thank you, Ron. This is a little bit more of an advanced issue. I'm trying to remember if we discussed this in our book on relativism or not, but I've certainly written a lot about this, and particularly of late. The simplest response to how do we know what we know is that we know things in a variety of different ways, okay? But when it comes to morality, we know morality based on reflection. I mean, think about it. How do we know that 2 plus 2 equals 4? Well, we know that because we reflect on the numbers, on what 2 is, and what plus means, and we can just see that they connect, all right? And as something, so we're drawing on kind of an intuition there. Actually, now that I think about it, we did write about intuitions in this just before the fatal flaws section. And so there's some things we know by observation, like scientific elements, but other things we know by reflection. And science doesn't teach us about math. We have to have no math before we start science. And there's a reflective process, okay? And so I think the same thing is related to the issue of morality. We think about human beings, for example. Are human beings just merely animals? And the answer to that, of course, I think is obviously no. And everybody understands that, although this is being taken exception with, and I guess you got an interview coming up with Scott.
Wesley.
Smith. Yeah, that's right. And that's going to be a great interview, I'm sure.
Especially in light of
he's talking
SeaWorld.
About PETA's comment, a boy is a cat. I mean, a rat is a boy. Yeah,
exactly.
A dog is a boy, yeah. But most people know better. and they know that human beings ought to be treated differently because they're not merely animals. So this is an intuition that we have. I mean, and so, okay, well, if human beings are special, then what are our obligations towards them? And, well, we don't hurt them unnecessarily. We don't kill them. We don't take what it belongs to them. The point is here, Kevin, and also Ron, is it turns out that everybody has a set of moral concepts, as you pointed out, Ron, built into them already, even if they disregard God and the Bible and Christianity and religion at all. Then they still have these built in. In fact, they can't avoid making moral statements because it's built into them. And I think that it is built into them in the same way that our ability to see mathematical relationships are built in. Math is a real part of the world. Morality is a real part of the world. Now, sometimes we get our math sums wrong, particularly if it's complicated math, and sometimes there's ambiguity about what the right answer is regarding a moral situation. If it's a complicated situation itself, and sometimes we have to go back to the basics, the real obvious moral principles, and then build up from there to the less obvious ones. It also helps if we have God entering the picture that gives us some insight on some of these things, and this is what the Bible amounts to, among other things, an insight on God's understanding of morality. Now, I don't mean to suggest, though, you have to have a Bible in order to know morality, and I don't mean to suggest that you even have to believe in God in order to know morality. You don't have to believe in authors in order to read an article. Mm-hmm. You can still read the article, but you wouldn't have an article unless they were authors. And even though we wouldn't have morality without God, a person can deny the existence of God and still be aware of morality, even though I think his project is wildly inconsistent. So I would say, Ron, start with the process of reflecting on obvious moral truths. And these are things that virtually everybody holds to be the case. And if they don't acknowledge obvious moral truths in casual discussion, they definitely acknowledge, because they're guarding turf, if they're a relativist, they will definitely acknowledge moral, basic moral terms when they're not thinking about it and they're reacting. And you'll watch for the moral language, and we talk about this in our tactical section of the relativism book.
You know, I had a conversation, and we have to take a very quick commercial break, but I'll just make a segue to it this way. I had a conversation with a fellow some time ago who, his name was Paul. He said to me, "You can't even prove to me that I exist." And I didn't think of it at the time, but I should have kicked him in the shins and said, "Did you feel that?"
Yeah.
If you did, then now we know that you exist. But I basically said to him, if you're not willing to admit that, there's nothing I could possibly say to you.
No, you're right.
That would be of any good
whatsoever. The other clever response, and it's from somebody else, not me. Ravi Zacharias says, "Well, who's asking the question?"
Yeah, but
or who's making the statement?
Exactly. We'll talk about it some more when we come back from the break. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Hi, this is Kay Arthur with Precept Ministries International, and I want to urge you to listen to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. I believe that this man has been chosen for this time when truth has stumbled in the streets. You need to know the truth, for the truth will set you free.
Knowing the Truth, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 o'clock on Christian Talk 660.
Words carry immeasurable significance. What would homes, churches, schools, and even the public square be like if we used words with Christian intentionality and eloquence? Crossway has made available The Power of Words and the Wonder of God, which includes essays by John Piper, Paul Tripp, and others, all taken from the messages of the 2008 Desiring God National Conference. The book challenges readers to harness their tongues and appropriately command their silences for the glory of God and the ministry of the gospel.
Looking for a great way to learn more of God's Word? Do you wonder what the Bible says about specific life issues? Divine Direction is an audio CD with over 300 Bible verses arranged by subject. It was developed to help people find biblical solutions for everyday issues like anger, depression, worry, and more. Divine Direction gives people hope as they learn that God's Word has solutions for all of life's problems. The biblical model for true change is also explained in order to help us have genuine and lasting victory over sinful habits. Divine Direction also includes a section that explains the salvation message and is an excellent tool for witnessing to unsaved loved ones. Let's face it, people are busy. Divine Direction is the perfect way for those who are on the go to learn God's Word and be encouraged with the message of hope. It's available on CD and also as a download for your iPod or computer. To order Divine Direction, simply go to power-ministries.com. That's power-ministries.com.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the last segment of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. I had mentioned to you coming back from one of the other breaks about the programs that will be coming up next week. The easiest way for you to find out about those is just to go out to the website at knowingthetruth.org. That's Knowing the Truth, www.knowingthetruth.org, and you can find out all the information about those upcoming guests. And also, I mentioned to you out there the special pastors fellowship that we're having next week on Thursday. Make sure your pastor knows about that. The whole design of this is we have an interest in promoting the spiritual growth, the fellowship together with like-minded pastors, and so we are trying to make these events as affordable as possible. In this case, it's absolutely free, and plus we're going to give them free tickets to the upcoming conference right here in Greenville. This way, there's no travel expense involved. They've going to be able to go right to downtown to Second Press in downtown Greenville. That's where the conference is going to be held, so they won't have any travel expense at all for the people that live right here in the upstate of South Carolina. They get to hear some of these great speakers. I mean, this is this PCRT conference. The other sites that they host this in, I think one is in Philadelphia, the other one is in Sacramento, and then Greenville. Greenville is on their radar of what's taking place, and that's primarily because Rick Phillips, as the chair of the PCRT, is pastors right here in Greenville. So we're so blessed to have this conference right here. But I want to make sure, I want to give pastors two free tickets to be able to attend that event right here in downtown Greenville. And like I said, they're $125 a piece for the tickets. And so you need to take advantage of this. Was able to work out a deal with the Alliance in order to be able to do this, the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. I mentioned next week will be Josh Harris, Scott Rasmussen, and then Wesley Smith will be with us on the broadcast. Let's go back to our discussion with Greg Kokol about his book on relativism. Again, let me mention Greg's website. The name of it is Stand to Reason, and the URL, the address to be able to get to it, is simply www.str.org, STR for Stand to Reason, STR.org, and avail yourself of all of the resources that they have there, training courses. You know, we've got to teach apologetically. We've got to understand how to defend the faith. We need to really be able to know what we believe and know why we believe it, and this website will help you to be able to do that. Greg, just before the break, I got an email from somebody right here in Greenville, Doug, right here in Greenville, and he says, please ask Greg to speak on the idea that 100% relativistic morality will result in chaos and anarchy. Would you address that a little bit?
Yeah, I actually don't think that 100% relativistic morality will result in chaos and anarchy, because what that a total relativistic morality will allow is it will allow the strong to control the weak. So it won't actually turn out to be chaos, because if there are no moral obligations of any kind, then there are no moral restraints upon people who are stronger than others. So you'll get eventually, I mean, it might start out a little chaotically, but eventually you're going to get some stronger group or individual to oppress the weaker ones. If you think about it, the animal kingdom is not subjected to morality, but they don't. It isn't chaotic. It's partly organized because God has given instincts to animals that, in a sense, organizes them. But as it turns out that the stronger overcome the weaker, and there's no moral concerns about that. That's what keeps order, you know? Mm-hmm. And so what we'd end up with is something like a totalitarian state where the people are not morally obliged to do good, but they will be obliged to keep the law, whatever that law happens to be, whether it's, from our perspective, good or not, because there is someone powerful that can force them to do that. Mm-hmm. So I understand his point, and I'm sympathetic to the point. I get where he's going. But I just would refine it a little bit and say, no, what'll this turn into is the law of the jungle, which isn't chaotic. It just means that the strong rule the weak, and that's not much better, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. We see quite a bit of that taking place in our world today. You know,
that's right.
The oppression, and we speak about it as something called social justice, you know, is a term that's being thrown around today. But basically, just the idea that groups of people are being oppressed by other people that have some sort of power over them. Book of James talks about this
often. You know, it's curious, though, Kevin, that the notion of social justice, and I think it's abused in our culture today, but the notion of it, the impulse, is grounded in moral objectivism. In other words, it's the idea that there are rights and wrongs, and someone has been wronged, and therefore we have an obligation to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ironic that some people will talk like relativists in some circumstances. That's when it's convenient to them. But then they want to pound the drum of so-called social justice on the other hand, and this is wildly inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
It just shows that on one hand, people want to selfishly presume there is no morality when it suits them, but when it doesn't, then they are, you know, then they're really clear on objective moral principles when it suits them otherwise, you know. It reminds me of the person you talked to at the end of the last segment who says, you can't prove to me that I exist. I wonder if that would work if he went to his boss for whom he's worked a month and the boss withheld his pay.
Yeah.
And the guy said, where's my money? He says, well, you can't even prove to yourself that you exist, so why should I, why would I owe money to somebody that doesn't, I have no good reason to believe exists.
Yeah, we didn't know where to send a check.
But obviously he'd complain because he's just playing a game when he says that.
Right.
He knows better, and so do most people.
Well, that leads, and we've got to conclude, we're down to under just a couple minutes here, but it kind of, this is where the real battle is, I think, is in pointing out the inconsistencies to the people that we're talking to.
Right,
do you agree?
Right. Yeah, the main tactic in dealing with relativists is just to show that their view is commits suicide in practice. So they say, well, there is no morality, therefore it's wrong for you to push your morality on me. Now, wait, hold it for a second. If there is no morality, it can't be wrong for me to do anything, including push mine on you. Anything is allowed, and if I can get away with it because I'm stronger, then what's the complaint? You know, I mean, you may not like it. All right, I can understand that, but why should I care? Because I have no obligation to care about what you care about, you know, if there is no morality.
Right.
And we tell people to find their hot button, the relativist hot button, what he really cares about, maybe social justice, and then relativize it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, play by his rules. And not to be snarky and not to be, you know, get a notch in your belt and put other people down at a corner, but to show them, look, your view doesn't work and you don't even believe it.
Right, exactly. Well, Greg, thank you very much for taking time out. I know you got a busy schedule there. You guys are doing great work at Stand to Reason and the entire, really taking the lead on a lot of the apologetic approach and helping to train the church to think this way. Thank you for writing this book and Tactics and for just taking the time out to visit with us. We really appreciate it.
Kevin, you're really welcome. And just to let people know, all of those issues I brought up in the early part of the show, the three types of relativisms, all are fully answered in the book itself, as you know. We just didn't get to the answers.
Right.
Should we didn't have enough time.
Is your website the best place for them to go to find out about how to get a copy of this? This was
You go to our website. You can go to Amazon, has relativism as well, but our website does as well. And the Tactics book you can get at Amazon or str.org. But at str.org, they can download a whole bunch of free stuff, too, and you can't do that at Amazon.
Excellent. That's right around our price range. We appreciate it. All right. Thanks
at
a lot.
That price, I'll take two. Huh?
That's right. Thank you, sir. We really appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Kev.
All righty. Well, that was Greg Kokel, and Greg, of course, is the founder and president of Stand to Reason. I mentioned that during the broadcast, and you can go out to their website at www.str.org. A lot of good stuff out there. We need to know this stuff. We need to be able to articulate what we believe, and we need to be able to do it in a winsome way, a way that really engages people. We have nothing to fear. We have the truth on our side. In fact, remember, the Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Go to church this Sunday. Learn about the truth. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Stanley.